Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's risen from his deathbed to see you. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Oh, I love to see you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging around with Inch High, Private Eye. Scraping the bottom of the barrel. They're like, there's people my age who will have no idea what that is. I don't know why I'm even looking at you. I mean, Inch High, remember Inch High, Private Eye? Yeah. He calls it realist of us. I don't know if that's going to catch on. I'm a little bit ill. I think I'm okay. I've been, you know, I did seven podcasts in 4 days last week, which may have been too many podcasts in three different towns. So, that was a mistake. And then I got ill, and I think I'm nearly better, but I've got a little bit of a croaky voice, if that's just to explain that. But luckily, I've discovered someone called Chris Cooper, I believe, sent me an emergency question that had been created by artificial intelligence, these chat things that you can put in. And I've been lying in bed just thinking, I don't need to do any work ever again now. I'm going to prove it with this episode. This is the emergency question that artificial intelligence came up. Write a question in the style of Richard Herring. I think this was the first one I saw. I think this one's pretty good. If you were stuck in a lift with a sentient jar of pickles that claimed to be your long-lost brother, would you believe him? And if so, would you risk tasting his briny essence to confirm his identity, or would you prefer to remain a cucumber coward? They're not all that good, but that one is sort of like, that one was so scarily I could have written that. There's a lot. I've got loads, so it's great. I don't have to ever work again.
So we'll mainly do artificial intelligent ones today. I'll give you some examples. There's a couple that I probably won't ask, like, if the world were to be populated entirely by Richard Herring lookalikes, would it be a utopia of herring-based hilarity or a nightmarish dystopia where the same jokes are repeated ad infinitum? I'm sort of being dissed by a fucking artificial intelligence there.
Ask it again.
Would you rather be forced to sit through an eternity of Big Brother episodes or be stuck in a room with Richard Herring reciting an endless stream of bad jokes? That's not what I asked for. There's a few good ones in there, though. What would be the worst experience of being eaten by a giant? That's a good question. There's a lot there. I asked ChatGPT, is it cheating to have sex with ChatGPT? I asked it that. It says, no, it's not cheating to have sex with ChatGPT. ChatGPT is a chatbot, not a real person, so it's not considered cheating. So there we go. Got quite flirty with me there, didn't it? It's up for it. I thought, again, save me some time when I was ill. I asked it to write the opening monologue for an episode of Rahalastapa. Ladies and gentlemen, this is it. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, hopefully not. And anyone else who's found themselves inexplicably drawn to this podcast like a moth to a flame or a Brexiteer to a pint of warm beer. Bit political. Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or Rahalastapa for short. That's not what I would say, is it? Now, I know what you're thinking. Who is this ChatGPT character and why is she opening for Richard Herring? I never asked it for her to be a... I don't think female ChatGPTs are that funny, so I don't... That's... you what's happening to you, David? You've gone insane with your heckling. Are you drunk?
Yes.
Good. What happened? Why is she opening for Richard Herring? Did he finally run out of comedians who are willing to be seen in public with him? Well, the truth is, I'm not a comedian. I'm actually an AI language model designed to generate text. But don't worry, I've been programmed with plenty of jokes and witty banter to keep you entertained for the next hour or so. And speaking of entertaining, we have a fantastic guest for you today. They've been described as the funniest thing to come out of, insert guest's hometown here. So Sedgefield for our first guest. Since the insert humorous local landmark or product here. I mean, that's no good, is it? So it's the funniest thing to come out of Sedgefield since the Sedgefield Hall. Yeah, some fans of Sedgefield in there. I'm not just saying that because I was programmed to. So sit back, relax, that's what I say, and get ready to laugh until your sides hurt or until you realise that the bleak, uncaring void of existence will inevitably swallow us all. Whichever comes first. It's time for Rahalastapa with Richard Herring and our very special guest. He is probably... That's quite good, wasn't it? That was all right. I don't need to... I might not need to do that. I might be replaced. I might be replaceable. Our guest tonight is probably best known for his appearance as Teddy in Footballers' Wives. Will you please welcome the incredible Mark Gatiss, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Gatiss. Here he is. Come on in. Teddy from Footballer's Wife.
That's true, yes. That yeah. is what I'm mostly recognised for.
you get that a lot with your famous catchphrase.
Yeah.
Was Teddy an agent or something?
He was an agent, yeah, football agent. I asked to do it because I wanted to do something really trashy, and I remember I thought it was fun. I had my catchphrase was football or something. Something to do with
play
football.
Play good football.
It's been 8.5 years since we did this.
I know. You were on episode 47. This Absolutely. Is episode 437. Yeah. And there's been loads of specials, so it's over 400 episodes of this have gone by.
I thought it was about a month.
it doesn't feel like 8.5 years. It was September. Yeah. It was the 29th of September 2014.
Christ.
Remember that?
Yeah, I remember Christ woman, that bit.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I remember.
Okay. I don't remember that bit. I didn't listen back,
I said Christ woman, and yeah. I said it sounded like She-Hulk or something.
Okay,
like a superhero.
Right. That's right, good, that's good. It? Yeah. Well, when someone hasn't been on for ages, the good thing is I just think I'll only look at stuff they've done since 2014, so then I can't repeat myself. But there is one question I have to ask you before, and I think everyone will want to know the answer to this. If you were stuck in a lift with a sentient jar of pickles that claimed to be your long-lost brother, would you believe him? And if so, would you risk tasting his briny essence to confirm his identity? Or would you prefer to remain a cucumber coward?
Yes or no?
It's a hard one to
Why
answer.
Would his briny essence confirm he was my long-lost brother?
There's more questions than answers.
Not going to take over the world. That's not the Turing test, is it?
It is. But, you know, would that be... Maybe if you had a long-lost brother, would you give him a lick just to... the pheromones and stuff within... Not sure pheromones are the right thing to talk about with your own brother, but...
I always think... pheromones always make me think of Persis Cumbatta. Do you know what I mean by that?
No.
Anyone? Thank you. She played Lieutenant Ilea in Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Okay.
It's the first time I ever came across pheromones.
Okay.
You remembered. Good.
It's good when you and I are very good at finding one person who remembers the thing we're talking about in the audience, which is good. And also, last time you were on, I had a terrible cold, and you had a cold and a bad back, and I've got a bad cold again. So maybe that's just been going on for 8.5 years.
Yeah. Easily.
But it's a weird coincidence that I'm ill for both of these. I may be allergic to you.
Yes.
that from a distance. What's happened. What's going on?
How many people have you had back?
I mean, quite a few.
Yeah.
You
run out.
Adam Buxton's been on eight times. Adam Buxton in various forms, because there's different podcasts.
Does he take different forms now?
He takes... he's been
come
a spider.
On as like a butterfly.
He probably can. But, yeah, there's some people who come back more. And also some people who are in double acts and then come back in the singly or with the... sometimes, you're always welcome, Mark, to come back any time you want. Or in 8.5. We can just put you in for 8.5 years.
Every 8.5 years. Like an MOT.
I have a question. I've got questions for you from AI. This is why I'm not going to be replaced by AI. For some questions from Mark Gatiss, and it's disappointing. What is your favourite episode of Sherlock that you wrote or acted in? No. What is your favourite... I mean, this is bad. This is like a child would... When I had Welsh children...
Child would be better.
Welsh children used to write my questions and they were much better than this. Yeah. What is your favourite memory of working with the cast and crew of Sherlock?
No.
If you could play any role in Doctor Who, what would it be?
This is poor.
It's very bad. So we're going to have to stay with me. I've got a question from Robin Asquith. The star of the Confession series. I think he's a real person. But he looks so young. Maybe he is AI.
Yeah, maybe.
Could be R2. I mean, is it intelligence? Is Timmy Lee intelligent enough to be called artificial intelligence? He said, ask him if he enjoyed the resistible rise of Arturo Ui at the Darlington Hippodrome in 1982.
He knows I did, because it was a formative experience for me. Robin Asquith of the Confessions films was in Brecht's The Resistible Rise of Arturo Ui, which I saw on a school trip. And he was absolutely brilliant. And I've never forgotten it.
Yeah.
And it ends, you know, the bit at the end when he pulls off the moustache, talks about fascism and the beast that bore her is on heat again. It really stayed with me. He was brilliant. He's a very good actor.
He's a very good actor.
Yeah.
So he's been a guest on this as well. And I love the fact that he's open to talk about all that stuff from the 70s. Yeah. But it's sort of, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because he could have been remembered as being this incredible actor, which I think he still is. But the film choices he made in the 70s have.
He's been curious. He's been adopted by a lot of clever people who don't seem to mind that the films were really terrifying and wrong. He's a sort of symbol of a different age, isn't he? I found out something amazing the other day. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, I do.
So you know. Denville Hall, the actor's retirement home.
Yes.
There's another one called... I have to come back. Anyone know? No. There is another one down the road, and that's for light entertainment.
Oh, really?
Denville Hall is sort of legit. The other one, which begins with a B, is like Brindley Hall or something, is for light entertainment. And I just thought, well, that's an amazing sitcom that's never been good. Sort of rivalry between the two. And apparently... Richard O'Sullivan, who is there and has been there for many years, shares a flat with Mike Yarwood.
No.
Is that amazing?
Yeah.
That's another sitcom we've been denied. Who are you going to be today? Yeah. Amazing. And this is me, says Mike, every day.
Well, it is sort of... today I was watching Nolly, which you play Larry Grayson in, and which is about Crossroads and... what's her name?
Noel Gordon.
Noel Gordon, yes. I can only think of Nolly now, I've been watching it. Noel Gordon, and it is that... You know, there were big, people who were big stars, and Larry Grayson must have been a really interesting person to play, because he is... he is that figure that he had that long period before he became famous, and then he was super famous in the UK and then disappeared again, basically. So, I mean,
yeah, it's a strange thing. He was basically a 30-year overnight success story. He was a club comic, very, you know, just doing his stuff for years. Then an agent from ATV saw him, I think it was Michael Grade, and got him a spot on an ATV variety show. He was such a success, he got his own show, Shut That Door. And then, amazingly, and this never happens, Bruce Forsyth left The Generation Game at the height of his powers to go to ITV for the money. Never a good idea. And some genius thought of Larry Grayson. So unlikely.
Yeah.
And it was even better, you know.
Yeah.
But then it's like 10 years of absolutely ruling the roost, and then he just stopped. That's the end of that. But I've become hugely fond of him. Watching him again, you realise what a masterful comic he was, and how beautiful it is to see his control. As I say, you know, he was born for camera three. He just has to go, and he gets a huge laugh. And it's filthy stuff, yeah. But it's also very gentle and kind of. And Russell T. Davis said to me, he said, I wonder if there was a story in Larry, but there isn't. He was just lovely. Right. Everyone loved him. He lived in Nuneaton. Used to wave to everybody, lived with his elderly sister. She looked after him, he looked after her. It's just charming, really. Yeah.
And when you get, you know, you play real people quite a lot. Mm. When you get to play someone like that, is there a lot of, are you doing a lot of research into?
Yeah, well, it's mostly watching videos and getting the voice, and I got the teeth quite quickly. So, but it's always an interesting thing. I'm about to play John Gielgud at the National Theatre, and it's such an interesting process, listening to it a lot, trying to get the voice and trying to place it in your voice, you know, things like that. But Larry was quite challenging, because he's actually deeper than you imagine, and then it kind of floats off somewhere else, you know. But as soon as I had the chair and the teeth, I was all right, you know. And one of the most amazing things about doing it was... So Helena Bonham Carter comes to see me in my show, and we shot it at Stockport Plaza with like 150 extras, and it was like a quiet matinee. Yeah. And I had to do it. I just had to do the act for, you know, and it was quite addictive, actually. I thought I might tour it.
Well, people
shut that door again.
People do take someone's act and do it in an interesting way.
Yeah, I saw that poster for that Fawlty Towers dining experience. Yeah, that made me go a bit funny.
Yeah, I'm not sure that exactly. Though that would be you doing Larry Grayson dining experience. Or the League of Gentlemen doing a League of Gentlemen dining experience, but with you actually in it. That would be amazing.
I'll tell you what, here's a strange story. When we did our last tour in 2018... we got to, it might have been Oxford or maybe York, I can't remember. But we arrived at the stage door, and there was someone in the theatre watched us troop through, and he went, "The Originals." And I thought, is someone touring? Is someone touring as us without us knowing about it? Really weird. And here's a strange story. Our tour manager manages Queen.
Yeah.
And he's also weirdly in charge of looking after the tribute acts, because Roger Taylor apparently was once one of like devises and it's a loose end, and he went to see a Queen tribute act, and he thought they were so shit, he decided that Queen should look after them. So they've taken them all in, and they have auditions for the tribute bands. Isn't that amazing? Sort of power mad.
It is what the whole... I was seeing Sacha Baron Cohen, because Sacha Baron Cohen was meant to be in the Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it fell out with them because they said, there's an amazing thing that happens halfway through the film. He goes, oh, what's that? He goes, Freddie dies. Yeah. They go, you're doing a sort of Pulp Fiction, putting the end in the middle. No, then it's about the band. The band coming back. And that was what
there's a fabulous lack of self-awareness.
Yeah, there is.
I remember watching the the BAFTAs when Rami Malek won, and whoever was presenting was in a generalized way saying, you know, there's no Morecambe without Wise, there's no Queen without Freddie Mercury, and Roger Taylor and Brian and Brian May in the background just go, well, there is, as far
and
as
it's, and it's better. I didn't see this play, but I'm fascinated. I saw you talking about it on BBC Breakfast, or a clip. You played Jacob Marley and directed your own version of the Christmas.
I know, I wrote it. It was directed by Adam Penfield.
Oh, you wrote it, right.
Yeah, it's coming back to
is it? Oh,
Ali, Ali Pally, not with me, though, this Christmas.
Because I've always been quite obsessed with Jacob Marley.
Me too, that's why.
It's been a bit unfair on him. Why did no ghosts come to warn him? He's quite nice, isn't he, to come back?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, in the Muppets, there's two of them. So he comes back twice.
Danger's an intervention for his friend.
Yeah, it's a very nice thing to do, and yet you never hear from it. I don't think maybe you addressed this. Someone told me you rewrote the end of Christmas Carols.
Oh, maybe.
Well, we can't talk about it.
It's very faithful. Otherwise, I love it. I've always loved it. The Albert Finney version I saw when I was four. It was one of the very first things I ever saw at the cinema, and it really left a mark on me. And I've always loved the idea of, weirdly, that it is too late for Marley. I quite like that.
Yeah.
And Scrooge is the one who's given the chance, you know. But it's it was strange because it was always it was the last question I was always any parts you'd love to play, and I would always say, I always wanted to play Jacob Marley, waiting for someone to offer it. Eventually, I just had to do it myself. But then I did it, and then it's like, oh, right, I've got to think of something else now. I want to play an AI generator, I think.
It's interesting to want... I mean, you know, I think it's a good choice, but it's interesting to choose Marley over Scrooge.
Yeah, well, I suppose... That's the crazy thing. I mean, literally, having written it, and it never occurred to me until we actually got to rehearsal that I wasn't in it very much. But I play lots of other people in it, you know, sure. So it was all fine.
Yeah. I don't know whether Scrooge is worth saving, you know. I mean, I know there's versions of it. I know the musical version, it has a bit more of a backstory, and he's had a bad life, and then maybe, you know, he deserves retribution. But why bother saving Scrooge? I mean, I think Marley's nicer than Scrooge. It should be the other way around.
There should be a modern version with Jacob Rees-Mogg, I think. but he'd just send them packing, wouldn't he? Or in fact, any of them, really.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that can save this government is a visitation by three spirits.
Yeah, they wouldn't care.
No.
They'd keep on arguing that they were right.
On the little boat and send them back. They do.
On the River Styx. Send them back to Hades, where they belong. I'm just
the River Styx. That's quite good.
The River Styx.
Quite a good joke.
I'm disappointed that in most of your work, you have, after a strong start, you failed to put Tim from The Office in very much of the stuff you've done. You put Tim from The Office in Sherlock. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
But then he's hardly been in anything else.
I know.
You've done.
Sad, isn't it?
And you haven't even put a Shrek in, so I'm disappointed in that. you're doing lots of exciting things in the theatre. You directed The Unfriend, which I was going to see, but...
COVID.
Was it COVID? I was on the train into London, coming from Hertfordshire, having spent...
Money.
A lot of money on tickets, saying the performance has been cancelled. Yeah. So a big debt we booked in weeks before, me and my wife's date.
You've got till the end of April, you're fine. Go. Yeah, it was COVID, and it was...
I haven't had my money back yet.
It was strange because it felt... I thought, well, everyone's going to go down with this, and we seem to be the only theatre.
Right.
So it was like a sort of strange outbreak. But yeah,
tell us about The Unfriend, because it's had fantastic reviews.
Yeah, it's Stephen Moffat's first play, and it's based on a true story.
Yeah,
Stephen and Sue's friends Peter and Debbie were on a cruise, and they met this very funny, vivacious American woman, more than slightly non-PC, but everyone loved her. And they did that thing. They swapped email addresses, never thinking that she'd get in touch. And then a few months later, she got in touch and said, hey, I'm coming to London. So they invited her over with them and stay with them and the kids. And then Peter Googled her because he thought, we don't really know anything about her. So he Googled it, and then he rang his wife, Debbie, at work, said, you know, Elsa is coming to stay with us and the kids. Yes. He said, I've just Googled her. Don't Google her. What's the worst thing you can imagine about her? And she said, I don't know, she's a murderer. Yes. And she was. She was a serial killer. And she got off. She killed two people, got off on a technicality, served a year in prison, roaming the world. So they emailed her and said, we've Googled you. They never heard from her again. And then Peter told this story idly to Stephen on holiday. He just went, can I have that? And then in the story, of course, they're basically too English to say no.
Yes.
And then everything goes wrong from there.
It sounds fantastic. Yeah. And will that go? Is that going to just, is that running till April and then that's it? Or will that? Will
I
that
don't, go? I mean, it's hard to know in the current climate, as they say. Yeah. I mean, there's certainly, the current cast can't continue.
Yeah.
So, but ideally, you know, it would be great if it ran for longer, but it's about getting a theatre, finding the right cast, etc. But hopefully, if it's not immediate, maybe it'll come back. But I did hear an amazing story the other day. I'm not sure I should tell you this, so I'm going to tell you. Someone I know who knows Susan Hill, who wrote The Woman in Black.
Yeah.
Now, the stage show of The Woman in Black, which have you seen?
No, I haven't.
You should. It's brilliant. Okay. Brilliant. It's so simple, and it was written as a stopgap in the summer of 1989, and all they had was two actors. It was like, what? This'll be easy. And it has run for 33 years. It's every producer's dream of how to, you know, you know, it costs nothing. It's brilliant. It's incredibly effective. And it's finally coming off the Fortune Theatre and going on tour. And this, my friend who knows Susan Hill said, she's really furious about it. And he said, Susan, it's run for 33 fucking years. And it was supposed to last for about 2 weeks. So she's done fine out of that.
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe 33 years of The Unfriend would be great.
And how was it directing Reese? In this? Was
that great? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's an interesting dynamic with someone you've known so long and worked with in a different capacity.
Yes.
But I suppose you just have to, you know, run the room and go for it. I mean, there's a certain amount of, I mean, he's an absolute genius, comic genius. So he's come up with some amazing stuff and it continues to grow, sometimes a little too much, you know. But there's a, I saw it a couple of weeks ago, and there's a whole sequence where he has to gird his loins to knock on a toilet door to speak to somebody. And he just built in this fantastic new thing where he sort of rehearses it because he can't bear to say it. And it's just come out of nowhere, you know. Right. So it's been, yeah, great fun, actually, I have to say. And also lovely to spend time with him. I mean, funny, in the last couple of years, because I did Inside Number 9 and then The Unfriend and something, and then Steve and Reese and I did Good Omens
in
Scotland. We actually suddenly did loads together again after years, and it was really good fun.
Is that okay? Is it, you know, it's kind of interesting the way it's fractured and separated off into those two working together a lot, and you occasionally popping in. Is that how you wanted it to go?
It wasn't a plan. We just when we in 2005 we did a second tour, a big tour, and the film, and then we did have one of those lunches you used to read about in memoirs about what we should do next, and we sort of all wanted to do different stuff, I think. So that's it. But you know, we're obviously still very good friends, and we do collaborate, so it's nice. And you know, as a student of comedy, that's what I always loved about Monty Python, that you know that John Cleese turned up in Ripping Yarns and they did each other's films and stuff like that. I always thought that was really touching and something to aspire to, I guess. You know?
It was a very strong episode. It was a good, you know, because they waited a long time to...
Yeah, and it was the right one, wasn't it? Because it was about a reunion.
Yeah.
So it was full of ghosts in a way, you know.
Was it fun being out in that boat?
Yeah, although the one I felt for was Diane Morgan, because she was fantastic.
Yeah.
But you know, the three of us together, we just basically talk in a secret language. and you know, you pick up where you left off, don't you? And I think sometimes she looked at us slightly askance because we didn't know what we were talking about. But it was great fun. Although pedalos are really hard. They really are so hard. I remember being on holiday as a kid thinking it looked like so much fun. And then like 2 minutes in, you're going, Jesus Christ.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Right, I'm going to ask you some AI-generated emergency questions. This is the big test.
Yeah.
It's not the AI has not done so well so far, but let's see if we can win it round. What would be a good emergency use for a giant Toblerone?
Home Secretary.
Good. I mean, some of these are better than others. If you had to create a new type of breakfast cereal, what would you call it and what would it contain?
Ooh.
I mean, that's quite a this sort of apprentice-style question, that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, God. I had a Dishoom breakfast the other day. Have you had one?
No. Oh, yes, I have. What, yeah. the Indian
I mean,
place.
You wouldn't necessarily think about having an Indian for breakfast, but it was like a... It was basically bacon and egg... Bacon and sausage roll with chutney.
Yes.
It's lovely.
Yeah, I had something there. I can't remember what it was, but it was... Yes. Terrific. Maybe some.
But I know it's not. That's not a cereal, isn't it?
No.
Well, I imagine they've all been thought of.
I don't know if a curry cereal is, but you know, yes. I think a curry cereal. You might be onto something.
I wouldn't do that.
Vindaloo.
Are there
cereal.
any missing cereals that have cereal crops?
Oh, cereal crops. I'm so.
I've thought of one, but I can't say.
Why?
Well, it would be awful. Well, there is indeed no rape cereal.
Okay.
Yeah. You see.
That's unfortunate for rape that it's got that name. Yeah. A Vindaloo brand, come, that would be, it would be
well,
a
yes,
very good
it could
start
be
to the day.
Cause and effect.
Good. All right, we've got it. See, we're doing well. All right, this there might be some improvisational in this. If you were to give a cat a human voice, what would it sound like if it sang the national anthem? I don't know if that's a different national anthem, if that's the cat national anthem that you have to make up, or whether they're singing God Save the King.
What voice would it have?
Well, if it's got a human voice, it's not a good question, is it?
No, it's very strange.
Very strange. I'll do one more, we'll see.
How many episodes is this?
This is episode 437.
Maybe the end.
It might be, we might have finished it. Some of these are... Because then I went to make them more complicated, so I got a few...
What do you put into it, then?
Well, I'd really just put write an emergency question in the style of Richard Herring, and that kind of worked quite a lot. And then I said, write a more complex one. Let's see what this is. If a monkey had a magic wand and the ability to cast spells, could they use it to create a portal to a parallel dimension that they would then be able to control the inhabitants of that dimension, or would they be subject to the whim of the magical creatures of said dimension? What do you think? I mean, it seems like a
self-defeating. It's a yes or no question.
It'd be I don't think we should give monkeys that power.
Yes.
And I don't think they should be in control. Okay.
Well, do you believe in the multiverse? Do you think
annoyingly, I tried to write a sitcom about this a few years ago that was good, I thought. And it was called Everything Happens for No Reason. And then the Oscar-winning film, with almost the same name.
Yeah,
but Channel 4 wouldn't do this. Everyone loved it, apart from the one person who had to decide whether it went to see.
That's because you need Richard O'Sullivan and Mike Yarwood.
I get that. They have in an alternate universe. Yes. That's what they're doing. Somewhere they're doing it. I don't know if I do, because my problem with it is that even if there's infinite amount of multiverses, I think there could be an infinite number of different, you know, the infinity has different values, doesn't it? Because you can say there's an infinite number of numbers, there's an infinite number of odd numbers, there's an infinite number of even numbers, but there's obviously, you know, you're sort of, that sort of doesn't make sense. It sort of doesn't make sense, does it? Because there's obviously double the amount of numbers if you have both.
What
I'm saying is... What I'm saying is I think there's an infinite number. You know, I think we could have an infinite number of universes and you and I don't crop up in any more than one.
I think it's interesting. I talked to a physicist once about it and about quantum theory and et cetera. And you know, do you believe it? And he went, yeah, of course. But he said you can't go to work thinking about it because you wouldn't get through the day. It's such a head fuck.
Yeah.
That you just have to go, well, this is our one. But in a way, it sort of it does explain an awful lot of things which are inexplicable, like ghosts and things or time tracks and that sort of stuff. If, you know, it seems to be feasible.
It does, but then there's... Because I found it all too... I did have a book that tried to make quantum physics a bit more understandable. It wasn't more understandable. But there's there's a possibility of 11 or 12 dimensions. So there's a possibility that we are just the shadow of the thing.
It's exhausting.
That is the fifth dimension. Yeah. That we don't know what it is. So we could just be the byproduct of something else happening that we don't know.
Do you remember that time that when A Brief History of Time was and then the people actually, I remember people on the tube going, right, can I enjoy this? And they're two pages in going, what? It's not popular science. It's really difficult science. Yeah. Yes, science is hard.
It is too hard. But I think when you really get into it, it might as well be religion. It's so fucking insane.
Yes, it might as well
quantum
be
religion. Physics is, yeah. It might as well be a religion because it's more mad than any religion. Yeah.
Probably will be.
Yeah, good. good, we sorted that out. So you're doing this, you're doing the National Theatre. What's this, the play? It's a different play
it's
than...
It's a play by, a new play by Jack Thorne, directed by Sam Mendes, called The Motive and the Cue, and it's about Richard Burton's Hamlet on Broadway in 1964, which John Gielgud directed. And it was it's a lovely, very touching play, but I didn't really know anything about this production, but it's a huge success, but a sort of personal disaster for both of them.
Right.
Because Burton hero worshipped Gielgud, but it didn't work. It didn't gel. And it's basically all about that. Why we do it, why we do art, why we do theatre.
Yes.
It's really lovely. And Tuppence Middleton plays Liz Taylor, who is the sort of go-between between the two of them. So, yeah, it's lovely.
Weird naming it Tuppence Middleton.
Yeah. I call her Tupi.
Yeah, she's from somewhere near Bristol, I think, isn't she originally?
Don't know.
First
you're the expert on the lady.
I don't know that because I did a gig in Bristol. I think I did one of these in Bristol and she came up as a local resident and I found it funny. Tuppence.
It's a nice name, isn't it?
It's a nice... Well, is it? Yeah, it is. A little old baby, let's call it Tuppence. Yeah. It's also the name for vagina, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
You're the expert on the lady. Your reputation precedes you, Richard. Is it?
I think it's a childish name for the
well, you could say that about a lot of things.
Tuppence.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's fine. Tuppence has got a tuppence.
You say that, Dick. Don't you? Dick Herring, that could be something else.
Michael McAdie was the first person to point out in my entire life that my name is Dick Herring. It took Michael McIntyre in 2007, just before he was launched to stardom. I think that was the moment.
That's much bluer than his usual material.
But isn't that weird that that never occurred to me or the many people who've tried to make jokes about my name? And so, like, that's where Michael McIntyre's genius is.
Yeah.
He managed to take that down to the three parts and make it about anal sex. So the National Theatre... This is, you're also working on a play, the Way Old Friends Do, which is... That's the one's about... I saw a little ad popped up on Instagram for that one.
That's written by my husband, and I directed that. That's just finished a Birmingham rep and is now on tour, coming to London next week.
Okay.
It's about the world's first ABBA tribute band in drag.
Okay.
That's not a true story. It's about two old school friends who meet up again in middle age, and they had a kind of triggering experience as kids when they did some ABBA songs at school. It went very badly wrong, and then they have the idea to fill an unnecessary gap by doing an ABBA tribute band in drag, which amazingly no one has done. It's not been thought of.
Right, yeah.
Very sick. Yeah.
And sort of that's become not quite topical, but the drag thing has turned into this sort of...
Strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very strange. So strange how... Also, it's sort of... Drag is like the victim of its own success, because if it hadn't gone so mainstream because of RuPaul, I don't think it would be now ammunition in the culture war the way it is.
No.
I was just saying to you, wasn't I? It's now, as of yesterday, illegal to do drag in Connecticut. So it's the beginning of something. And it's just so terrifying. There's that Jon Stewart interview pointed out. It's like... The problem is guns, it's not lipstick. It's just astonishing how mad America has got. And, you know, we're going to get our pound shop version of it.
Yes.
And already are, I think, the way that certain things are being used are being weaponized in this sort of phony war.
Yeah, well, artificial, you know, it's
artificial outrage.
Yeah, I'm making a problem that isn't there, surely. I mean, it's not...
When there are actual problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Very big ones.
Yeah. And so it's a distraction thing, but it's also sort of going, what if people in drag went into schools and started having sex with each other, which isn't what drag is about. Yeah. and then that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So it's
there's so much of that, isn't there? It's a sort of confirmation bias that the idea is floated, and then people, you know, my father-in-law will then repeat it back to you because the Daily Express says it's actually happening.
Yes.
And then you get this extraordinary vicious circle of self-belief and confirmation. It's going, you know, the mythical they.
Yes.
I see they're doing. They've banned this now, and you go, they haven't. Whoever they are, they haven't. Yeah. But he believes it, and then you cannot break that. It becomes a matter of faith. That's the thing. It's weird. It's back to religion. It's a sort of zealotry, isn't it? I think, like Brexit. It's like despite all the evidence, it is a question of faith, and they would rather die than say opposite.
Yeah. Do you feel it's a... I mean, is that a big proportion? Is it like...
Well, they're in the fucking government.
They are.
They're in charge of us.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm afraid so. I mean, you read those polls every day about how much it's dwindling and how people want to rejoin, etc. But, unfortunately, the ruling party doesn't want to engage with that, and nor does the opposition.
No.
So we are living in a gas-filled world of misinformation and... Jesus Christ. Sunak the other day, with his Northern Ireland accord, his Windsor agreement, nothing to do with the king, but called by his name, and he actually stood there and said, this is amazing, it gives the Irish people all the advantages of the free market. And you're going, I mean, the smell of gas was overpowering. It's like, how can you do that with a straight face?
Yeah.
You know? Jesus God.
Do you think it will, you know, is it a period of madness, or do you think it will deflate and go away, and people will someone sensible take over and sort things out for us?
My personal feeling is that what will happen is it will become the settled idea that it was a terrible idea, but no one will ever actually say it. It'll just be quietly, we shouldn't have done that. But by which time the economic and damage is absolutely off the chart. But then I don't know. Honestly, to sound like a Daily Express leader, I don't know what's happened to this country. The fact that we are just cheerfully filling our drinking water with excrement and no one seems, well, apart from Fergal Sharkey, who saw that coming, is able to do anything about it. It's just mad. It's like we're just spiralling into madness. And yeah, I don't want to. I'm a natural optimist, but it's taken a hit, I have to say.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, but that's so in the cause of, it's interesting with the Larry Grayson thing, which sort of comes up in the piece, is Larry Grayson is surprised that, you know, like the younger generation in the 1970s, 80s are able to, like,
hold hands
and show affection. Yeah. He sort of doesn't like it. Mm. but you know, we've moved on a long way from there. Mm. I mean, I hope it won't pull back.
Well, that's the danger. You know, we imagine progress just keeps progressing. And it, in fact, there are, you know, constant backpedaling, you know. Or you just think, oh, well, you know, genuinely, this country, at the time of the Olympics, I think there was a general and genuine feeling that we were in a good place.
Yeah.
Something good was happening. It was the Olympics was a massive success. We felt forward-looking. David Cameron was prime minister, but it was okay. He was pretty progressive. And Jesus, how, I mean, 10 years later, it's unbelievable, unrecognizable. And there's so much of it is totally unnecessary. It's just manufactured outrage and belligerence and nastiness. And people like Suella Braverman, fuck me, what is she? She makes Peter Patel look nice. I mean, she's barely human. She's just evil, and it's nastiness for the sake of it. Remember, Theresa May famously said, "People still think of us as the nasty party." And you're going, "Well, you should look ahead in the future." Gosh, it's gone very political, hasn't it? It's quite exciting.
Well, I was going to move on to Game of Thrones, which I'm not sure is
it's the same thing.
It's going to change the subject, but you got to be in a few episodes of that.
Yes.
Was that? You know, it's a lovely career you have. It seems to me. I mean, all of you legal gentlemen guys have very nice things going on.
It's all been lovely.
But you get to do, you know, writing, directing, acting, and then you can crop up in a blockbuster.
Well, it was I auditioned for it. I went in one of those ways. I was in about four or five episodes, I think. But I didn't really. I knew of it, but I hadn't seen it or anything like that, and I hardly seen it at all. It's not. At the time, people would bombard me with questions. And I had no idea what they were talking about. And I've said this before, but I always, growing up loving Doctor Who, I always loved reading interviews with old actors who'd been in it in the past, who had very sketchy recollections. But they'd always say things like, "I didn't know what it was all I was talking about, but it was such fun." And they remember the pubs and things like that. And I sort of always wanted to to be in something that was like that for me, where I had no stake in it.
Yeah.
And Thrones was like that. People would ask me who should be on the Iron Throne, and I'd go, me, just randomly. or I'd remember a name from the scene and just sort of pluck it out. Yeah, but it was great fun. And I went to Croatia for one of them, which was delightful. And but it was just—it's funny to be on the fringes of something that massive, you know, because you don't really have—I say—you don't have a stake in it in the same way.
Yeah, and I on IMDb, which is not always correct, it says you're going to be in Mission Impossible.
Yes, I'm in Mission Impossible.
So have you filmed that already?
I've done. Yes, it's 7 and 8.
Okay,
but it's parts 1 and 2.
So like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Dead Reckoning, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Parts 1 and 2, which I've done. Yes, I've done that.
You've filmed them both?
I've definitely finished the first one.
Okay.
Because that's coming out in the summer. The second one I did a month on last year, and I think there'll be more because it's basically in a state of constant production. Because they have more money than anyone in the world. And it just rolls on. It's an absolutely extraordinary experience. Yes. Brilliant, but kind of mind-blowing because it's so vast, you know.
Yeah. And Simon Pegg still in, yeah. in that. I mean, that, so that's, you know, the 1990s
yeah,
the
intake.
Comedy scene.
It's well represented.
It is.
Yeah.
Turning up in...
Yeah.
It's sort of, you know, I think with someone like Simon and Peter Serafinovich, who end up being in sort of Star Wars after... Mm. I've just started watching Star Wars with my son, who calls Darth Vader Dark Vader, which I think is a better name.
That's good. That's good.
You know, they, and similarly, you know, our generation would have watched that, not quite at his age, but, you know, and then to end up being in those films. Mm.
Yeah, it's wonderful. But yeah. it's sometimes quite strange because you're sort of looking at yourself as an eight-year-old thinking, what would that be like? But also, you're not that age, you know? So yeah. I always said this, when I was finally in Doctor Who, it was strange because... I know David Tennant for years, and I was already writing on the show. So in a way, just sitting in that trailer was like another job.
Yes.
And then suddenly I just got this kind of absolute pang of Saturday nightness, and it was like, you know. But it is. I'm sure. I mean, Simon feels the same. I know it's quite weird to think this is actually happening now.
And is it just so? I mean, I can't imagine sort of being thrown into that world and being. Presumably alongside Tom Cruise and acting alongside Tom Cruise. Are you at the point now that seems normal and it doesn't affect you? Or because I'd just be going, fuck your Tom Cruise in the scene, and he'd go, that's probably spoiled that scene. I'm not actually Tom Cruise in this film.
They just do retakes. No, the really odd thing about that is that he's there all the time. So he's very, very generous and funny and available, but he's there all the time. So you do get used to it. And then every now and then I'd literally catch in the corner of my eye, just go, because it's like a poster is in front of you. And, you know, he's a little, and he's 3 years older than me, but he's been around all my movie going life. For years. It's just an extraordinary thing. So, yeah, the answer is yes or no.
Yeah.
You kind of get used to it, and then occasionally you just go, this is absolutely insane.
And do you feel the need to do your own stunts once you see him flying off? I saw a long clip of him building up to, I don't know if this is in this film. I've never actually watched any of the Mission Impossible
films. Oh, they're really good. You should, they're good.
But he flies off a cliff on a motorcycle and then parachutes down.
I'll tell you the story. So the script is always a work in progress, and everyone was terrified, and we only got a few pages the day before, but it was quite complicated stuff. And you turn up like, and a friend of mine, Indira Varma, was in the first one. I didn't realize, and we saw each other across the room, and she just went, oh, thank God. We sort of clung to each other, but you know, we were desperately trying to cram all this technical stuff into our heads. And then Tom showed us this video of him doing this stunt where he drives a motorbike off a Norwegian fjord 7 times.
Yeah.
And the video shows that he trained for a year.
Yeah.
And you just watch, and then you think, maybe I can remember those words. but my God, I mean, it's incredible. And I said to Chris McQuarrie, the director, studios wouldn't allow their lead to do the stunts, and he said, "You try and stop him." It's incredible. I mean, he knows no fear. There's another video you might have seen. I think it was Christmas time, where he wishes everyone happy holidays.
Oh, yeah.
Virtually, basically, from the stratosphere,
yes.
you can see space above him, and then he just falls backwards. Absolutely. I mean, he must be missing that, you know, that nerve, the fear.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to do that. Talking of working with impressive people, though, now, when you were on, which we did talk about last time, you were on this morning, Richard Not Judy, you played Greg Evigan, memorably.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you've worked with him.
I made this.
I don't know if you've worked with Greg. I was watching a clip of my two dads the other day.
Is he still alive?
I think he is. Yes. I think he is. The other dad did better, of course. The other dad was Paul Reiser, I think, wasn't he?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So he was in Alien and many other things, and just been in, what's that? The sitcom he's in, it's been cancelled, but it was really good. Nah, never mind. It's got Key or Peele in it, one of those. Right, you've worked with, you played Anthony Hopkins in a sketch that we wrote.
That's right.
About...
Yeah.
him writing letters to various co-stars.
Right.
And each time there were this sort of forbidden romance that was building up.
84 Charing Cross Road.
Yeah, 84 Charing Cross Road, and the one where he was a butler. What was that one called?
Remains of the Day.
Remains of the Day. Yeah. And each time he would end the letter.
Yes,
appears.
I am wanking. Yes, I've never forgotten it.
You you finally got to work with Anthony Hopkins himself on The Father. Did this come up?
Yes, he brought it up. No, I didn't. I might, yes. He emails me a lot,
does
actually,
he?
So I might.
And does he ever end P.S. I am waiting?
He has yet to do so. I might remind him of it.
The beauty of Lee and Henry sketches is no one really is aware of them. The lucky thing is that if that become very successful and you become known as...
Yeah.
Anthony Hopkins wanking. It probably would have made it quite.
It's come
difficult.
To my attention.
Is he, do you think he would find it? Has he got a good sense
yes.
of humour?
He's a very funny man.
Is he? Yeah.
He was everything you'd want him to be, really.
Yeah. Know?
Just, I mean, he very quickly realised that I'd seen everything he'd ever done. He go, Jesus Christ, you haven't seen that one, have you? I just make him do all my favourite stories, you know, which is. He does this brilliant one. I read it somewhere years ago about it was about not being overawed, really.
Yeah.
And he was in a production of The Country Wife in the West End, and his mum and dad were coming to see it. And Olivier suddenly rang and said, "I'm coming tonight," and he sweated cobs about his parents and Olivier being in the same dressing room. And they came round, and Olivier came round, and then his dad was talking to Olivier about football in the corner. And he was like chewing his nails and just like, oh, God. And eventually Olivier made his excuses and went, and he said, "Dad, that was Lord Olivier." And his dad said, "Well, he breathes air, doesn't he?" It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, he's full of wonderful wisdom and just that everything you want, that amazing Welsh voice and just such a lineage, you know. It was just brilliant. And then I said to him, it was Reese's birthday. I said, "My friend is obsessed with Magic, the film where with the inventor of Chris Dummy." I said, "You wouldn't do a message." He said, "I'll do it if you like." So he did the whole routine. You know, he goes, "I'll tell." He does that. He does it all with his eyes rolling. "Sweet mystery of life at last." He did everything.
Yeah.
Reese was beside himself. And yeah, he just loves doing funny voices and stories. So yeah, he was great.
Oh, man, that's terrific. It's very nice to hear.
Then he cracked one off at the end.
He cracked it off.
And I thought, it's all true.
Well, is there anything else that's coming up that I don't know about? Or is it,
that'll do.
I mean, you've got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I know. It's been a lot, you know, weirdly, a lot of it is COVID-related in the sense of backlog things.
Yes.
I did The Unfriend last year. It was meant to be 2 years before. And so some of it is cumulative, really.
Yeah.
But as I was saying to you earlier, people always say to you, "Oh, you're so busy." And then I did the Alan Titchmarsh show the other day, and the researcher was obsessed with Fear of Fanny, the thing I did with Julia Davis years ago about Fanny Craddock. And they showed a clip. There were two questions. And I said, "Well, if you don't ask me about things I did 20 years ago, we might have time to finish this interview."
Well, we've hopefully got most of the current thing and Footballers' Wives and a little bit of the old stuff in. It's always absolutely fantastic to have you. This 8.5 years ago and now and in 8.5 years' time, which will be, what does that be?
What 20, year is that?
That's like 2031.
Wow. We can't leave it that long.
Okay, we'll come back before. We'll get you guys back.
Frightening.
Reese was on recently again. He was in very fine form, I have to say.
Again, he's been on twice.
He's done it twice. Steve's only done it once.
Oh, interesting. What about Jeremy?
Jeremy's never done it.
Get him on. Jeremy. You see, you need new people. You need new blood.
New blood in there.
Don't you? Do you watch Portrait Artist of the Year on Sky?
I haven't, no.
One of my favourite shows. But it's interesting how often they get people back.
Yeah.
And I feel a bit disappointed by that. Like they're running out of artists. You know?
Yeah.
You're running out of funnies.
There's always new ones.
You need an AI. Yes, there's always new comics, aren't there?
They keep coming up.
Yeah, damn them.
Damn those youngsters. But some of us oldies, and we can stay alive longer.
Still alive.
We're still here.
Yes.
That is fantastic. Really love to see you again, Mark. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up. The amazing Mark Gatiss. Thank you. We'll be back next week. One of those young comics. You have been listening to Rahulastapur with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Mark Gatiss. Scant Regard are playing the music. That I know for sure. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker, also to Chris Evans, not that one, and all of his team. And thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having us along. It's been quite good fun. This is a Sky Potato, Fuzz, and GoFasterStripe.com production. Thanks also to Kathleen McKeegan for a fantastic website, Rahulastapur.com. Goodbye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or richardhang.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.